You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Day from 1 till 2 p.m. Our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews and culture pieces from across Otepoti, Dunedin.
Kia ora, you guys are listening to Radio 1 News at 1 with Gabby and Amy. We'll be back shortly with the news bulletin, but up next is Aisha Island with the other kids.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
Kia ora, you're listening to the R1 News at 1 with Gabby
and Amy. In university news, the inquest into Sophia Cristani's death at a student party has begun, Anna Leask of New Zealand Herald reports. At the beginning of this week, an inquest began in the Dunedin District Court to seek to establish the specific circumstances that led to Sophia's death, as well as identifying ways in which to prevent similar deaths from occurring in the future. More than 20 witnesses will give evidence, including tenants of the manor and partygoers. In October 2019, the flat known as the manor hosted their last party before the property was taken over by the University of Otago. The manor hosted their last... More than 300 people had gathered at the property when tenants called the police to help them shut it down. Panicked students stampeded out of the house and Sophia was crushed on the staircase. Police arrived and cleared a path to Sophia, but she could not be resuscitated. The inquest will be upsetting for Sophia's parents, but they are determined to see it through. It will never bring Sophia back to us, and she will never get to realise her full potential. But we are hopeful that after inquest, we will be able to move our attention from all that happened at that party and to Sophia on the night, and be able to remember all the happy times we had together. The Sophia Charter was set up in her name, as well as 2 scholarships and 2 awards, so that she will be remembered not as the student who died at a student party, but as the vibrant, fun and caring young woman that she was. The charter is a shared commitment by Dunedin stakeholders, including the university, police, Fire and Emergency New Zealand, Otago Property Stakeholders, Investors Association, Dunedin City Council and Otago University Students Association. Through the Sophia Charter and more collaborative approach being taken by all the charter partners, we are seeing change, but there is still more to do. There are many changes that have been put in place as a result of the Sophia Charter. However, an ongoing focus and support from all the charter partners will be needed to continue to build on these positive changes. University of Auckland rental strike continues. Lachlan Rennie of New Zealand Herald reports. Members of the Students for Fair Rent group have been refusing to pay rent for almost a month, beginning on May 1st, demanding a blanket reduction and safeguards against future rises. The protest was sparked by an annual 8% rise in rents at the start of 2024. Waipāruru, New Zealand's largest student residence, has increased weekly rent from $470 last year to $510 this year. Students for Fair Rent Chair Matthew Lee said that while they have had discussions with the university, they have no plans to end their strike, saying that they have asked us to go through alternative routes to change this issue, to raise this issue with the university, routes that have historically done nothing. Lee said that some students taking part in the rent strike have had their key cards deactivated and have been given the choice to resume payments or have a meeting with their residential manager, where they were often pressured to withdraw from the protest. A University of Auckland spokesperson said students know the cost of residences when they sign up for them. They also stated that access cards sometimes stop working, but they can be reactivated at a 24/7 reception. If students were behind on rent, staff would remind them to follow up on payment or to book a meeting. Organisers claimed that 196 people were taking part in the strike, but the university said only 16 of the 4,200 residents of the university accommodation had notified they were taking part. Citizens Advice Bureau National Advisor Sasha Green said that while the university was required to act in good faith, it had several options if students refused to pay rent. They could not only terminate a student's tenancy, but also charge late fees, limit their course selection, withhold exam results, pursue legal action, and refer a student to a debt collection agency, as there is no legal basis for a rent strike. The university has the right to decide to terminate the agreement.
In national news, government figures show that tens of thousands of people past the retirement age are paying off their student loans. RNZ, NZ Herald and ODT have reported on these shocking figures. A 40-year-old woman who graduated with $40,000 of debt is still left with $5,000 of debt, saying she finds it demoralizing to be 40 still with a loan. I'll never get ahead. I have so many decisions that did not set me up to be financially successful. Financial mentors say this is not a rare situation, with at least half to three quarters of pensioners still having student loans. Many low-income people have been shocked, discovering that superannuation was being docked to repay student loans. Repaying your loan through your pension has not been the forethought. It is possible to apply to have your loan payments paused on grounds of hardship. Loan payment grounds currently are set at payments of 12 cents of every dollar earned over $24,100 a year. Pensioners who live alone receive just over $31,500 a year, meaning they're eligible to make those payments. Government data from the 30th of June 2023 shows that there are 21,710 student loan borrowers aged 65 and over, with only 16,600 being New Zealand-based.
On Thursday, the 30th of May, a campaign group named Toitū Tiriti, Honour the Treaty, organised a nationwide protest against the government's policy for Māori ahead of the coalition's first budget release on Thursday afternoon. Rachel Maher and Raphael Franks of New Zealand Herald reported on how the group had planned a strike to demonstrate a unified Aotearoa response to the government's assaults on tangata whenua and Te Tiriti or Waitangi. RNZ reports that thousands of protesters gathered around New Zealand with marches and vehicle convoys planned along motorways, main streets and rallies in town centres. Te Pāti Māori, alongside Toitū Tiriti, said in an online post that the action was intended to prove the might of economy by disconnecting entirely from it. The leaders of the Māori Party continued to encourage Māori people and tangata Te Tiriti to strike despite a warning from the Prime Minister that it would be illegal to skip work for a protest. This is the second nationwide protest action Te Pāti Māori supported against the government and its policies. Assistant Police Commissioner Mike Johnson said that they were working to manage the right to protest and people's rights to go about their daily business. National Secretary of the Public Service Association, Kerry Davis, said that every worker, including public servants, has the right to protest and that it's not surprising that many groups were looking to protest the actions of this government, given their reckless approach to making cuts in the public services we all rely on and their disregard for Te Tiriti or Waitangi. Leader of Destiny Church, Brian Tamaki, criticised the protests and called the political party a terrorist organisation and accused them of inciting racial hatred. Tamaki claimed that members of Te Pāti Māori have called to overthrow the government.
In Otago University news, Pint Night was once again held in Oahia Ora this past Wednesday, contrary to all the promotion done by UBAR itself, its postering across campus and even our beloved critic. Another last-minute announcement confirming the location of every Scarfy's favourite Wednesday night activity was released by the UBAR socials, accompanied by photos of the construction site that is the hallowed and auspicious UBAR. The announcement, injected with passive-aggressive notes telling students to essentially bog off upstairs, was released at 1:30 p.m. the day of. Pint Night posters distributed and posted by UBAR advertising its incorrect location were seen across the university and their social media. To get the full scoop, I spoke to a few Pint Night goers, as well as Critics News editor Hugh. Scarlett was super excited to try out Pint Night in Oahia Ora. It's going to be really fun. In relation to the lies, Rachel said, "The dark and dingy club, integral to the Pint Night vibes, just doesn't match Oahia Ora's higher ceilings. I feel scammed, misled. I want to be in my cave." According to audiovisual Dropkicks band member Jeremy, "We made the posters when UBAR was still open, so he thought it was going to be at UBAR, and that the staff had been doing a really good job at being transparent about UBAR being shut. American exchange students, who I met in the bathroom, obviously, said, 'I feel betrayed by my local journalism sources.' Another girl declared, 'This is my last Pint Night, and I'm very upset that they lied to us. They should have told the truth.' News editor Hugh refused to comment. Many students did assume that it would be up in Oahia Ora, but argued that they should let more people in if there is a bigger venue and just as many people waiting outside as usual Pint Night. There's too much empty space compared to UBAR. However, according to sources I spoke to a few weeks ago, U-Bar and Ohio Order have the same capacity numbers, so they cannot legally let any more people in. Sounds like a job for the law students to fix. U-Bar will be open at the start of next semester, so we will see you back then in our favourite wee cave for Pint Night.
Those were the headlines for today on R1 News at 1. Catch up on previous R1 News wherever you get your podcasts or head to r1.co.nz/news.
This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Friday the 31st of May. Today's bulletin was written and read to you by Gabby Scott and Amy Martin. Later on in the show, we have an interview with Matthew Lee, Chair for the Students for Fair Rent Group, to discuss the rent strike at Auckland University, and Jonathan McCabe from R1 to discuss the Eggspiracy.
Kia ora, you're listening to R1 News. It's 1:30. We now have Matthew Lee, the Chair of Students for Fair Rent, joining us to talk about the group's current rent strike at an Auckland Hall of Residence. The aim of the strike is to demand a blanket reduction in rents and safeguard against future raises.
Kia ora, Matthew. Thank you so much for taking time to meet with us and discuss this topic. Obviously, as students ourselves, we're very aware of rising rent costs in New Zealand, and we're very grateful for you to come in and talk with us. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me today.
Awesome. That's good. So one of our first questions here is, would you be able to elaborate more on the numbers that we've got here from New Zealand Herald? Students for Fair Rent say that 196 people have taken part in the strike, but a unique accommodation have said that only 16 people have notified them.
Yeah, so the way that we do the strikes is when we announced the strikes and before we actually started the strikes, we ran a period of pledging. So students could go on our website to pledge to the strikes. So far, around 200 people have done that. I should note, though, however, is the number of people actually striking is probably higher than that, because people who have reached out to us saying that, oh, I don't feel really comfortable putting my name down formally for the strikes, but I will be participating in the strikes, which is fair enough. So the number that the university gave the Herald is the number of people who actually reached out to the university to say that they're part of the strikes. We actually discourage strikers to do that just because we don't want to put them in individual harm. It's more of a collective safety kind of thing. But of course, that just explains the huge gap. The university doesn't actually know how many people are striking, because a lot of people who aren't striking actually just can't pay their rent because the rent is just too unaffordable. It's too high. And so, that just the collective safety thing just covers everyone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So because obviously withholding rent payments can be quite daunting for some students, especially as they might not have alternative accommodation options in case of their tenancy being terminated by the university. So how did the idea of a rent strike come about? What do you think kind of spark this idea for you as something that could be done?
Yeah, well, the campaign started in, I think, like September or August of last year. And that was in a reaction to the university's announcement of an 8% rent increase across all catered and non-catered accommodations. And for context, at the time, we probably had the highest inflation we've seen in many years. Yeah. And it was at 6.7%. Which there's obviously a huge gap between 8% and 6.7%.
Yeah.
But on top of that, there's also wage growth was not as high as that. I think it was at 5.6%. And for students as well, it's probably lower. That kind of kickstarted the whole campaign, and we went through the process of we did a petition. The petition reached 1,500 signatures. We held a huge rally, and this coincided with the elections as well. And so, you know, the candidates and campaigns, they were all really supportive, and we were getting a lot of traction. The university had a lot of pressure on them to act, and they didn't. We had a meeting with them, and it was just very clear through that meeting that they were, first of all, they weren't going to acknowledge it as a real problem. And second of all, they weren't going to commit to working with the campaign or with students to find a solution that works for everyone. And so we decided that, you know, the rent strike was a last resort, course, to show how important this was. I mean, to be very clear, we never wanted to do a rent strike in the first place. Never. But this is sort of, we've been forced to do something to show the university how important this is. And so the idea of a rent strike is actually not new at all. If we look at just in Aotearoa, in Wellington, students at Vic did a rent strike. Within 24 hours, they had 1,000 supporters. And within 4 days, I believe, they were really successful. In the UK, 45 universities did a rent strike. They were also really successful. In fact, rent strikes are becoming even more common nowadays because it's our way as tenants and as renters to show how much power we actually have. So that's how the idea of a rent strike came about.
Awesome. And the rent strike is specifically in response to Waipāruru Hall's increase to $510 a week. Would you be able to share some stories of how students meet this rent and how this impacts their studies in terms of having to pick up extra shifts, an extra job, or just generally not being able to meet this rent?
Yeah, so just to correct something in there, the rent strike is actually with all catered and non-catered accommodation. So at the University of Auckland, we've got 8. Waipāruru Hall is our largest catered hall. So all first-year students have to go through catered accommodation first. And like you said, it's at $510. If we look at what we get through student income, right, so that's student loan or student allowance, it's about $300 a week. That leaves us with over $200 gap with, I don't know what to do with that, you know. If we're looking at the minimum wage, we have to work an extra 10 hours to meet that target. And like, that's just rent, right? Tuition is what, 8,000, 9,000, for some people, 10,000 a year. Then there's, you know, just daily costs as well. So it's actually really expensive to be a student nowadays. It's, we all know, we're all students here. And so, at the start of our campaign, we ran a survey to try and get some of those stories. And we're hearing people who had to work 10, 20, even 30 hours a week just to pay off their rent and pay off their debt. It's actually an insane amount of time that they have to work.
Excuse me, do you have the room blocked?
Sorry.
That's all good. We'll just refresh some of the listeners' minds about the rent strike that's going on. So obviously there's a bunch of halls in Auckland. You've got the accommodation halls, but you also have ones for students who aren't in their first year anymore. So when Matthew is talking about catered halls, that's talking about halls that have food for them, that is catered for them. But in terms of the rent strike, this is referring to how students are refraining from paying their rent to protest the fact that rent prices have increased so much. Yep.
Yes, sorry about that.
That is all good.
So like I was saying, it's just expensive to be a student nowadays. And we're actually even hearing stories of people who have to choose between paying rent and paying for food that week. And that's an insane story for the university to completely ignore. It's actually just really disappointing that they're completely ignoring that. And so that's why the campaign is so important as well.
Absolutely. And so obviously the goal of this strike is to include a blanket reduction and safeguards against future raises of rent. Would you be able to tell us a bit more about these goals and kind of elaborate a bit more about what you're hoping to achieve with this rent strike?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, it would be really good if the university acknowledged it as a real problem, if they acknowledged that students are literally struggling to live in their accommodations. But yeah, as for specific demands, the first one is a blanket reduction in rent. It is just too expensive, just too high. And as for safeguards against future rent increases, we've proposed 3 measures to measure those rent increases against. The first one is, like I said before, the rate of inflation and wage growth. It needs to be in line with that. The second one is the average rent in Auckland Central. So for context, the average rent in Auckland Central is actually $200 according to Tenancy Services. So for example, I live in a self-catered accommodation. I live in a room in a 4-bedroom flat. I'm paying $350. The services that I get through accommodation does not justify that $150 difference. And the third one is student income. So that's student loan, student allowance. Like I said, $300, that's not enough to sustain us at halls. These are the demands that we're looking for. But like I said, these demands are not just with the university, it's to the government as well. The government also has a responsibility to step in here and make sure that education is a public right, it's a human right, and that rent is not a barrier to that right. It needs to be accessible.
Absolutely. And how have the negotiations with the University of Auckland been so far? Have there been any developments since these stories have been published in the news?
Yeah, so the one thing to know about the University of Auckland is probably more than any other university in the country, they're incredibly stubborn. And they're also incredibly obsessed with their reputation. And so actually they haven't made any public statement regarding the strikes yet. And here's my theory as to why. It's because they know if they say anything, it just looks bad on them. Because they know there's no way around it. The university has a responsibility to provide safe, secure, and affordable accommodation, and they're not doing that. They've also explicitly refused to work with the campaign, which is insane to me, that a university just refuses to meet with its students. And so, negotiations with the university has not gone well at all, if I'm being very honest. But that just shows that the university is so out of touch with students that they're unwilling to acknowledge that students are struggling to live. And so that's why the next step for the campaign is actually to reform the Residential Tenancies Act. So right now, Section 5(1)(h) of the RTA outlines the exclusion of student accommodation from the legislation. That's a huge problem because there's no other legislation that covers student accommodation, which essentially means that if you live at halls, you have no rights. You have no renter's rights. So that includes things like rent controls, things like, like rent increases, controls to their, healthy, safe standards. And also the biggest thing is we don't have access to the tenancy tribunal. That means that the university is essentially free to do whatever they want. We're vulnerable to whatever they want to do, and that actually is a huge problem. And so the next goal of the campaign is to reform the RTA to make sure that these safeguards are in place, to make sure that students are taken care of.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Matthew, for coming in and talking to us. We really appreciate this, and we really appreciate the insight that you've been able to give us into the situation that's happening. Obviously, as students, we're aware of it down here as well in Dunedin, so we really appreciate it. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Up next, we have got Persimmon by True Crime. True Crime by Persimmon.
Kia ora, you're listening to Radio 1 News. We're here with Jono to talk about the conspiracy going on with Farmer Brown. Hey Jono, how are you doing today?
Good, loving life. You?
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, maybe a little bit. So do you want to give us a background on what's happening here for any viewers that haven't read your critic article or just want to get a bit of background before we get into this interview?
So basically, Farmer Brown, which is just quite a big egg company, has put out this recent promotion, which is the Egg Blocks Builder Pack, where you can buy 8 eggs, but they give you 3 additional cartons that are empty. And if that doesn't make any sense, it's kind of because it doesn't and why I'm so angry about it. So basically, one carton is full of eggs, and then alongside is 3 other empty cartons. But the thing is that they're shaped like Lego blocks, or for copyright, they call them building blocks. And I just think it's pretty wasteful.
Yeah, interesting. And so, you've spoken to Farmer Brown about this?
Yes. I sent them an email just mentioning, my main things, concerns were just, absolutely environmental wastefulness and also a bit of child marketing. And is it okay I read out the whole comment?
Of course, lead on.
They said, thank you for your email in relation to our recent Farmer Brown egg block promotion. We acknowledge your questions regarding the 3 empty cartons contained in the egg blocks builder pack and potential effect on the environment due to unnecessary recycling being incurred. So they acknowledged that it, but to continue, they said, we would like to advertise that Farmer Brown egg block cartons are 100% recyclable, therefore are able to be continuously reused and recycled, hence contributing to a sustainable life cycle of packaging materials. For example, the cartons can be reused for plant seedlings, store Christmas decorations, and provide kindergartens and Do we need to keep...
Yeah, I think we get the point there. It seems like a whole lot of...
Yeah.
How do I tastefully say BS?
Yeah. They did keep on saying the cartons are also 100% biodegradable, which provides benefits that contribute to reduced waste accumulation. And, yeah. And then when I also asked them about why the price was so low, which was another concern to me, and they said eggs are a much-loved staple in Kiwi households and one of the most naturally nutritious foods. However, in the last year, we have seen eggs drop off Kiwis' weekly meal repertoire due to the egg supply shortage. Our aim with Farmer Brown Egg Blocks is to inspire and remind Kiwis about the easy, affordable, anytime meal solution that eggs provide and stimulate consumption. That does sound nice, but I'm a bit of a hater, so...
Yeah, it's definitely questionable. I mean, why couldn't they have these building block cartons and just give one, and so as you buy more, you can build your blocks. That's what I was like, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's making you wonder where they're getting the funds to give away all of these extra boxes for, and also let eggs be so cheap.
Yeah, that is a big thing. Like, the egg prices have just been absolutely inflated, like, out of proportion, and, like, it just seems stupid that suddenly they're able to make them so cheap. Like, why weren't you able to do this before?
How cheap were these eggs, maybe in comparison? Because it's a dozen box, right?
It's eight. Which is actually a bit unconventional.
That's really shocking.
Yeah, so I think it was, like, they made entire cartons for these. But we bought them at Pack and Save when they were on a deal. They were on a deal, but it was $3.79, which was by far, like, the cheapest there. I think the average price, from what I looked at, just off of regulation, was like $8 or a bit more for a pack of 12. So it was like ridiculously cheap. Like, we have like environmental flatmates and our management flatmates, and she was like, I hate this, but I just need my eggs. Like, this is the only way I'm gonna get this.
Yeah. And how do you feel about this kind of, they obviously mentioned having decorations for kindergartners and these building blocks, which that's, I'm sorry, a student does not have time to be doing building blocks unless they've got an SAG, you know. But how do you feel about that kind of focus onto young people with this kind of wasteful energy around it?
That's where the experiency comes in for me. So this is where I'm fully allegations. But I think they're indoctrinating the children. No, I just think, like, it's obviously aimed towards kids, and I think there should be some sort of, like, ethical considerations
100%.
With that. Like, but yeah, if parents are just going to buy what's cheapest and it's these, and it's just going to have houses, I don't know, I feel like maybe it's just going to make the kids, like, really like Farmer Brown or something.
Yeah. It's very not good.
Either way, our flat is filled of these egg cartons, and we actually, like, don't know what to do with them. We have built phallic images.
So you're just unleashing your inner artist, as James Charles would to say.
Yeah.
Interesting, interesting. Well, definitely. Thank you so much for coming on. If you guys want to read more about this, it is available in the latest and last edition of The Critic for this semester. So pop online, you can read it there. But thank you so much, Jono, for coming on.
Thank you for humouring me.
No worries. And up next is When Gods Lie by Reb Fountain.
Lean a little closer in the light of dancing bars. It's hard to hear. For me, one too many.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.